Hi, I'm Beth.
And I'm Jimmy.
And we're the Talk to the Hand podcast.
Hello, Beth.
Hello, Jimmy.
Who would have thought there were so many E17 fans out there?
I know. They're all coming out the closet now, aren't they?
Yeah, and there was a few other men that were admitting to liking the group back in the day as well, which was quite funny because you do have that feeling that you might be the only one. Apparently, when we didn't know this during the episode, but we were told afterwards, apparently one of the group said when they go out and perform, it's quite often men in their 40s. Now there's more men in their 40s in the audience than there are women.
Oh. So
there's a lot of us.
You're not alone, Jimmy.
Well, I didn't go to their concert, so
no.
I didn't want to be seen and outed. Today we've got a completely different episode for our listeners.
Someone who hopefully people will resonate with, very different to E17. Today we're going to be talking about Celine Dion.
Celine Dion, a big part of the 90s and with some real challenges that have occurred in the years since.
Yes.
We're going to go straight into the episode now, but for now,
rewind to the 90s.
Celine Marie Claudette Dion was born on the 30th of March 1968 in Quebec. She was the youngest of 14 children to her stay-at-home mum, Teresa, and her butcher father.
14 children.
Yeah, imagine being the youngest.
Yeah, 14 children.
You're getting the least of the food, aren't you? Yeah. They were relatively poor but happy. Her father brought home only $160 a week to care for his big family. Music was an important part of their lives. In fact, Celine herself was named after a French song that had been released 2 years before her birth. And as a baby, she slept in a drawer to save money on a cot.
Wow.
In a drawer?
In a drawer, yeah.
You're quite sure, aren't you, Beth?
I probably fit in a drawer now. Is that what you mean?
I'm just saying, if we ever get tight on space, it might be an option.
You're not going to put me in a drawer.
Celine Dion was backed into by a truck when she was a child. She was left unconscious for a number of days after being hit. Her tiny skull was fractured and she was completely knocked out. This trauma at the tender age of 5 must have been horrible for both Celine and her worried parents. Thankfully, she did not suffer from any permanent damage to her head or other part of her body.
It's horrific, isn't it?
Backed into a truck at five years old.
5 years old, she must have been crossing the road or maybe on the pavement.
And I believe that her father and one of her brothers watched it as it happened. But they couldn't do anything to stop it.
It was like one of those moments, it's almost like slow motion.
Yeah.
You can't stop what's going to happen, but you see it happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
After recovering from that horrific ordeal, while she's still only 5 years old, Celine sang for the first time in public at her brother's wedding.
Her parents ran a small piano bar called Le Vieux Baril. I've done, so much taking out French pronunciation just to stop embarrassing myself.
Yes.
But there were some that were left in. And that translates to old barrel. And after singing at her brother's wedding, Celine and her siblings used to perform there. Celine knew from that time what she wanted to do with her life. She later recalled, "I missed my family and my home, but I don't regret having lost my adolescence. I had one dream. I wanted to be a singer." She was bullied at school and called vampire owing to her teeth and skinny frame, but it didn't stop her pushing forward with her dream. At the age of 12, she wrote and composed her first song along with her mother and one of her brothers. The song was in French, but the title translates as "It Was Only a Dream." This was when the dream really began. Her brother was trying to seek out a name to send the recording to and noticed the name of the manager on the sleeve of a Jeanette Renault album. The manager was René Angil, and he was going to play a huge part in Celine's life from both a professional and a personal perspective.
When René received the recording, he wanted to meet Celine. It is said that he handed her a pencil and said, "Here's your microphone, now sing as if you were in front of a sold-out audience." Celine later said, "While I was singing, he started to cry."
René vowed that he was going to make this 12-year-old a star. Just 1 year later, he mortgaged his home to fund her first record, which later became a local number one hit and made her an instant star in Quebec. We're not going to name all the tracks recorded at this point in her career, because again, they're in French and I'll murder the pronunciations.
So to promote herself as a new artist, Dion travelled with René and her mum around the world. Celine's next move to grow her popularity came and went when she won the Top Performer Award and the award for Best Song at the Yamaha World Popular Song Festival in Tokyo in 1982, at the age of 14.
Dionne dropped out of school around the age of 15 to focus entirely on singing. She said, classes and schoolwork were taking me away from music, from my happiness and from my dreams. She went on to have success in France, but while there was no doubt that Céline had the talent to be a star, René felt it would not happen to the level they wanted without an image revamp. Local tabloids had cruelly called her Canine Dionne in the teenage years of her career. Now, if you look back at photos of her at the time, unrecognisable to what she later looked like.
Yeah.
It was unrecognisable. So they did a lot of work on her image, including physically, not just the clothes and stuff, but her teeth.
Cosmetics. She took an 18-month break from performing while her teeth were capped, her hairstyle changed, and a new wardrobe was bought. She also took English classes.
Much to the joy of her fans, she made her comeback with the launch of an album, Incognito, in 1987. This marked her debut on a major record label, unveiling a revitalised sound and appearance at the tender age of 18, as showcased in the music video for her single, Lolita.
Despite her Canadian nationality, Dionne took on the representation of Switzerland at the 1988 Eurovision contest held in Dublin. Recounting the experience on the Jonathan Ross show, Dionne described it as a peculiar adventure. In front of an audience of 600 million viewers, Dionne emerged victorious. The win proved to be financially rewarding for her manager, René, as Dionne shared on the Jonathan Ross show that he had placed a substantial bet on her to clinch the contest. She humorously likened the situation to feeling akin to a racehorse that had secured the win.
The evening of her Eurovision victory marked a pivotal moment in Dionne's romantic life. She was about 20 years old at the time, and she experienced her first kiss with her manager, René. Describing the transition, she mentioned, "The hugs just became better and his kisses moved across my cheek." Despite their deepening connection, the relationship was discreetly kept under wraps as both Dionne and René harboured concerns about the public deeming it inappropriate. Now, this is an interesting one, Beth, because he first met her when she was 12 years old. Now, if you think of what's happened recently with Philip Schofield, having met someone who was younger when he met them, but didn't do anything until the person was of a legal age.
Yeah.
It's probably not dissimilar to this situation in that respect.
Yeah, and I can understand that.
Now, as you look back with the benefit of time, they ended up having a really happy life together for a long period of time. But does that change the fact that...
But it's all about the intent, is it?
Well,
he was a manager and she was a young star, and it just happened to be that obviously as she grew up...
I don't know. He obviously went to great lengths to change her appearance as well.
I didn't really know that as much. I think that... But then, is that similar to Simon Cowell on X Factor telling someone that they have to lose
probably,
a bit of weight?
Probably very similar.
They have to change their hair and everything like that. He's in the business. René was the manager. He knew what was needed to be a star of that time.
I don't know. I feel
slightly uneasy
with it. So around the same time, Dionne also tried her skills at acting. She appeared in a TV series as one of two siblings who overcame a difficult childhood. After a dynamic decade of expanding her fan base and experiencing a glimpse of stardom, Céline Dionne was poised to make a significant impact in the United States during the 90s. Her debut English album, Unison, hit the shelves in 1990. The single, Where Does My Heart Beat Now, marked her inaugural entry into the top 10 of the Billboard 100, reaching an impressive peak at number 4 on the chart. In the following year, she achieved another triumph as she secured top spot in the top 5 with her song, If You Ask Me To. She joined forces with singer Pabo Bryson for the title track of Disney's animated masterpiece, Beauty and the Beast. This duet marked a significant milestone for her, earning her first Grammy Awards in 1992 for Best Pop Performance by a Duo with Vocal. The two talented vocalists graced the stage the following year, delivering a memorable performance of the duet in what became her first appearance at the Grammy Awards.
In 1993, Dionne decided to publicly express her affection for René. In the dedication section of her album, Colour of My Love, she poetically described him as the colour of her love. Despite initial concerns about the potential reactions of their relationship, fans warmly embraced the couple. Their love story culminated in an extravagant wedding ceremony in December 94, broadcast live on Canadian television. At the time of their union, Dionne was 26 years old, creating a 26-year age gap with her beloved husband.
Interesting that it was publicised on Canadian television at the time. That really shows you the status that she already had at that time.
Yeah.
So one of her most iconic tracks, The Power of Love, swiftly catapulted her to stardom. The song secured her first ever number one single on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, reigning supreme for an impressive 4 weeks in 94. Simultaneously, both the album and single Think Twice dominated the British charts, maintaining their dual occupancy at the top for an unprecedented 5 consecutive weeks. Now, Think Twice might have been the first song of hers that I can remember hearing.
It's interesting because I knew about Beauty and the Beast because I love that song. I didn't realise that came before Think Twice.
Okay.
Because I was thinking Think Twice was the first one I remembered.
What was really interesting though is she stayed connected to her heritage really. So she consistently released French albums in between all the English albums she did. And in the subsequent years, she introduced the French record due, aptly named the French album in the United States. And this release garnered tremendous success, earning the title of the biggest selling French album in history by selling an astounding 10 million copies worldwide. Then she had her 1996 hit, Because You Loved Me, and this soulful ballad not only ascended to the summit of the Billboard Hot 100, but also maintained its reign for an impressive 6 consecutive weeks.
Basking in the glow of her triumphs, Dionne graced the stage in Atlanta to perform at the Olympic Games. The world watched with an estimated 3.5 billion viewers tuning in globally as Dionne delivered a stirring rendition of The Power of a Dream at the opening ceremony held at Centennial Olympic Stadium. Capturing the moment on Facebook, Dionne shared a photo from the event. The same year witnessed another Dionne masterpiece, the poignant ballad It's All Coming Back to Me Now.
In 96, her album Falling Into You secured top honours at the Grammy Awards, winning both Best Pop Album and Album of the Year. The album's extraordinary success is underscored by its remarkable sales, surpassing the 30 million mark. She made history by becoming the first artist to perform 2 songs during the Oscars, stepping in at the last minute for Natalie Cole, who was battling the flu. Despite only having a day's notice and relying on sheet music, she flawlessly delivered I've Finally Found Someone. Now, James Cameron's 1997 cinematic masterpiece, Titanic, famously concludes with one of the most iconic movie songs of all time, My Heart Will Go On. However, the inclusion of this track faced initial resistance from Cameron, who was hesitant about featuring a pop song at the film's conclusion. Behind the scenes, the composers crafted the song with Celine Dion's powerful voice in mind and endeavoured to persuade the director. James Horner, the song's creator, revealed that he carried the tape in his pocket for 4 weeks, patiently awaiting the opportune moment to present it to Cameron, catching him in an unusually good mood.
And it's quite funny, isn't it? Because when we said to the kids about doing the podcast with Celine Dion, our daughter's first thing was, oh, is she the one that did My Heart Will Go, what, the Titanic song?
Yeah,
that's what she said,
yeah, that's
it?
What it was kind of known as, yeah. Informally, wasn't it? Now, Rene, Dion's husband, played a pivotal role in securing her involvement in the track. And as she reflected on that period, she said, I wanted to choke my husband because I didn't want to do it. Despite not being in the best condition during a trip to the recording studio, she persevered, showing up with the intention of swiftly recording the song. Her initial plan to sing the song and then get the heck out of there took an unexpected turn as the song seamlessly complemented the film, which went on to become the highest grossing film ever until 2010. Her contribution to the song earned her 2 Grammy Awards in 98, specifically for Record of the Year and Best Female Pop Vocal Performance. Furthermore, she received accolades in her homeland with a star on Canada's Walk of Fame and an induction into the Canadian Broadcast Hall of Fame. In 97-98, she achieved remarkable sales figures, selling over 60 million albums and being estimated to sell a record once every 1.2 seconds. That's incredible.
That is incredible.
And what's really funny is the director wasn't sure he wanted her to do it. She wasn't really sure that he wanted her to do it. And all the awards and everything that came off the back of them actually doing it.
As the new millennium dawned, Celine Dion, despite being at the pinnacle of her musical career, made a significant decision to embark on an extended hiatus. On the 1st of January 2000, she disappeared from the public eye, entering a period marked by both busyness and personal challenges. Dionne, recognising the necessity, chose to take a 2-year break from the entertainment industry. This hiatus wasn't solely about starting a family. It was also prompted by the challenging news that Rene had been diagnosed with throat cancer the previous year. This difficult period marked a significant chapter in Dionne's life, emphasising the importance of family and personal well-being over her thriving career.
So I remember at the time, I think it was said it was to start a family. I don't think it was public that her husband had had the cancer diagnosis.
No.
I don't think it was. So in January 2001, Dionne experienced the joy of motherhood with the birth of her first son, René Charles. This joyous occasion, however, followed a challenging journey as she'd undergone fertility treatments and two small operations to improve her chances of becoming pregnant. Dionne's hiatus didn't just mark a pause, it set the stage for a triumphant return. She secured a residency at the Coliseum at Caesars Palace Casino in Las Vegas in 2003. The residency, spanning until 2007, proved to be a colossal success, amassing a staggering $385 million from her 714 performances. It stands as the highest grossing Vegas residency for a musical artist. Dionne was honoured with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in January 2004, and this momentous achievement was dedicated to her late father, who had passed away the month before.
Dionne's personal and professional worlds continued to intertwine when she welcomed her twins, Nelson and Eddie, into the world in October 2010. Remarkably, just 10 days before her next performance, Dionne took to the stage to launch her second residency at the iconic Caesars Palace Casino, demonstrating her unwavering commitment to both family and career.
There were intervals when Celine stepped away from the limelight, prioritising her husband during his three battles with cancer. As René's health gradually declined, one of his final wishes was to witness Dionne's performance. He fulfilled this wish by watching a live stream of her Vegas shows. Tragically, in January 2016, René succumbed to throat cancer at the age of 73.
Merely 2 days later, Dionne faced another devastating blow as her brother, Daniel, succumbed to cancer. In the aftermath of these profound losses, Dionne found solace in diverse pursuits. She ventured into the fashion realm, launching a handbag line, and developed a profound interest in extravagant fashion. Reflecting on this transformation, she noted, "It's amazing how a little bit of fantasy can alter our moods."
That's a real bad run of luck there, isn't it?
To have
two very close, significant losses within a couple of days of each other. That's shocking.
That is.
In 2017, Celine not only navigated personal grief, but also achieved remarkable professional milestones. She etched her name into the UK records, becoming the highest grossing artist at various UK venues, including locations like London's O2 Arena, Leeds' First Direct Arena, Birmingham's Barclaycard Arena, and Glasgow's SSE Hydro. It's amazing how all these locations are so blatantly sponsored now. It wasn't like that when we were young, was it?
6 years following the release of her album, Loved Me Back to Life, Celine Dion unveiled her next English language project, Courage, in 2019. The lyrical themes often delved into heartbreak, as this album marked her first release after the passing of her husband, René. Concurrently, in 2019, Dionne brought an end to her long-standing residency at Caesars Palace in Las Vegas, concluding a remarkable 16-year run, during which she delivered an astounding 1,141 shows.
Subsequently, Celine excitedly shared her plans to return to Vegas for performances at the Resorts World Theatre in 2021. However, after 8 months of meticulous preparation for her highly anticipated comeback, the singer faced a setback. Severe muscle spasms rendering her unable to perform, and that led to the cancellation of her initial two sets of performances. And this was the beginning of a diagnosis that's yet to come.
On December 8th, 2022, Dionne disclosed a diagnosis of stiff person syndrome, a rare neurological ailment identified as the root cause of her spasms. Consequently, all future tour dates were called off, and in May 2023, Dionne regrettably cancelled the remaining concerts, citing her ongoing battle with the disease as the reason for this challenging decision.
With her enduring presence in the entertainment industry and global resonance, the multilingual songstress amassed significant wealth. Primarily propelled by the lucrative contracts for her Vegas residencies, her estimated net worth reached a staggering $800 million in 2021. Wow. $800 million.
She's a rich lady, isn't she?
She is, and she's worked incredibly hard. When you think about it, her career started when she was 12 years old.
Yeah, that is true.
Her commitment to philanthropy matched her financial success. Advocating for the Canadian Cystic Fibrosis Foundation since 1982, she also assumed the role of the foundation's national celebrity patron in 1993. Her dedication to this cause stemmed from a personal tragedy, as her niece Corinne succumbed to the disease at the tender age of 16, cradled in Dionne's arms. She's had so much bad luck. In 2003, she endorsed World Children's Day and actively supported various initiatives, including the TJ Martel Foundation, the Diana Princess of Wales Memorial Fund, and numerous health and educational campaigns. Displaying her generosity, she contributed $1 million to aid Hurricane Katrina victims and organised a fundraising event that garnered over $1 million for those affected by the 2004 Asian tsunami. Following the 2008 Sichuan earthquake, she donated $100,000 to the China Children and Teenagers Fund, expressing her condolences and solidarity through a heartfelt letter. She's a good person. Some people will say, well, she's got so much money, she can afford to do that. But she doesn't have to do that, and she does, and she goes out of her way. And if you do argue that she's got so much money, well, then she's investing time too in a lot of these activities. Yeah. She's dedicating parts of herself. When she's got every right to feel like she's had her fair share of tragedy and she doesn't need to do anything, she still goes out and does it. And I think that's worthy of great credit.
Yeah, definitely. Since 2004, Dionne and her husband, René, actively engaged with the Quebec gay community, endorsing the publication of health and HIV prevention materials in Gay Globe magazine. Furthermore, she aligned herself with the Canadian charity Artists Against Racism.
Despite persistent rumours surrounding eating disorders, Celine, known for her slender physique, consistently refuted the claims. Denying any eating-related issues, she emphasised the physical demands of her work, declaring, "My work requires me to be in great physical shape. I wouldn't have been able to give up to 100 shows a year and travel ceaselessly from one end of the world to the other if I hadn't eaten too much or not enough, or if, as certain magazines have claimed, I've made myself throw up after each meal." From her humble beginnings in Quebec to becoming one of the best-selling artists of all time, her story is a special one. From her French language releases that I couldn't pronounce, that captured the hearts of a nation, to her English language crossover success that catapulted her to the global stage, her voice has a legacy of its own.
Beyond the glittering stage lights, Dionne's personal life has been marked by severe highs and lows. Today, Dionne resides in Henderson, Nevada, in a house she bought with her husband in 2003. While she has largely stayed out of the limelight since her diagnosis of stiff person syndrome in December 2022, Dionne did show up at the 2024 Grammys in February to present an award. She said, "Thank you all, I love you right back. When I say that I'm happy to be here, I really mean it from my heart." And that is the story of Celine Dionne.
Wow, what an incredible life mixed with such highs and lows.
And such highs and lows.
I've never heard of stiff person syndrome.
No.
I don't fully understand what it is.
No, but I'm going to be Googling it now. I thought it was to do with the voice box. Yeah, the vocal cords. Definitely going to be Googling that. But it was nice to see her back in February. So nice that sort of people responded to her well as well.
And there's a lot of people who make comments about her weight because she does look very, very slim nowadays. Very slim.
But it is true. She wouldn't be able to have that longevity.
No.
If she did have an eating disorder.
And it is difficult because she's in the public eye, it makes her a subject of that kind of debate.
Yeah.
But actually, that's a much more personal thing. And I don't know, there's a part of me that feels she should be...
Left alone?
Left alone, yeah. She earned the money because she earned the money. Mm. Not because she sold the rights to her life to be put out there and all rumours and everything like that to be out there. She's had an incredible life. She's gone through some horrible, horrible things.
Family has been important to her. I'm pleased she was able to have children. So she's got the twins and the first son as well. So that's nice. She's got family around her.
If I would have said to you before this episode, "Name me a Canadian artist," who would you have said?
Yeah, Celine Dion.
Yeah, I think I would have too. Which is a testament to the kind of status that she's got for herself. The first name that would have come to your head.
Yeah.
So that's the story of Celine Dion. We really hope you've enjoyed the episode with us. If you haven't already, please go back and listen to some of our earlier episodes. There's some real good ones back there, certainly that we enjoyed recording, and we've had some great feedback from you. If you are a continued listener, we are really, really grateful, particularly to those Twitter followers that are regularly in touch with us. We're very, very grateful. You know who you are, and your continued support is greatly appreciated.
And we love hearing comments from our listeners, don't we, about their opinions about someone. We get told about all new facts that, I never knew that about that person, and things that caused them to Google other songs or things like that, or things about people. It's fascinating.
Yeah, there's some really amazing things that have come since we started doing the podcast. Now, one of my favourite ones was sometimes we followed someone on Twitter and they reply back and says, "Oh my God, you followed us. I was only listening to your episode this morning," or whatever. Stuff like that is just amazing. So we're going to continue doing that. We'll be back next week for another episode. But until then, take care of yourself and talk to the hand.